I'm Michael Silverblatt from KCRW and KCRW.com, and I'd like to welcome you into a new year with one of my favorite Bookworm episodes from 2020. May a good book ready you for a year that will be different than the last. May 2021 be good to you.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm excited to have as my guest Garth Greenwell. You know, he's been on before with a previous book called What Belongs to You, and yet his book called Cleanness, I think, is still more extraordinary. And Garth Greenwell began his writing life as a poet. What turned you to prose?
You know, that's such a difficult question for me to answer because it's so mysterious to me. I think it had to do with the 7 years I spent teaching high school, which I think, doing that, I discovered a new capacity in myself to be interested in other people's lives and in the world around me. And I think it had to do with moving to Sofia, Bulgaria, where I lived for 4 years and where I spoke a language other than English every day. Some combination of those things made me start hearing sentences that weren't broken into lines.
It's really interesting because on the one hand, there is in this new book, Cleanness, which is a novel divided into stories, kind of, and sections. Stories form sections. Sections lead to the novel. Mm. And we're watching the narrator develop his sense of sex and love there in Bulgaria. And so when he falls in love, it's with someone who is still more frightened about public expression. But the prose, your prose, is not frightened of this expression. You're taking great care in sort of Jamesian steps, comma by comma, to tell us what is thought and felt. But this mashup of James and pornography is absolutely, you know, it's a first time, I think.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a wonderful response to the book. I mean, the sentence is, for me, the unit of composition. You know, my great poetry teachers were three poets who are obsessed with the expansive capacity of English syntax, the poets Frank Bidart, Jory Graham, and Carl Phillips.
Oh, my. I knew about Frank Bidart. I am friends with and I love Jory. What a wonderful and wonderfully strange person.
She's magnificent, a real genius.
Yeah. Yes. But so is Bidart.
Absolutely.
And the third
is Carl Phillips.
Oh, and I know Carl too. You are very lucky.
I was extraordinarily
in your teachers.
Lucky. I mean, and this boy from, you know, a tobacco farm in Kentucky, you know, getting to study with these people. It's a real blessing. Yeah.
Wow, you're a boy from a tobacco farm in Kentucky?
That's only slightly exaggerated. I was first generation raised off the farm, but every weekend, every school break, we were on the farm. Yeah.
And somehow or other, though, you had three brilliant poets who were able to accept that you were going to become a novelist.
I got to have an extraordinary education. I did an MFA in poetry with Carl Phillips in St. Louis, and then I did half of a PhD at Harvard, which is where I worked with Jory. And then I dropped out of Harvard, and I disappeared and didn't have any contact with them for 7 years. while I was teaching high school 4 of those years in Bulgaria. But here's the thing. I mean, you know, I wrote What Belongs to You without ever studying fiction as a writer or as a scholar, without ever being in a fiction workshop. And I think, you know, I wrote it using the tools that I had, which were not the tools of a fiction writer, but the tools of a poet.
Yes, I think in the case of this book, it was very good for you to be in that circumstance, mm-hmm. because I think all a program could have done would be to expose you to people whose jaws would drop with agitation about your subject matter.
Right.
Which in your short preceding novella, Mitko, develops into your first novel, What Belongs to You. And these are books about falling in love with a male prostitute.
Yes.
And this is a subject matter. It's not that it hasn't been broached at all, but it's not been broached easily. And certainly, it hasn't been broached without melodrama. Mm. Your book, these two, are unmelodramatic. Mm. They're calm, passionate books about the fear that comes along when you reveal yourself to another person. And the other person in the first two books is that prostitute who is not used, really, to passion being directed at him by someone who wants to know what it's like to live a life with all the doors and windows open.
Right. That's a beautiful description of that relationship, yeah.
Now, Frank Bidart is not only one of your teachers, to me he's one of the very, very best and riskiest poets writing in America. But his life is a very different kind of risk.
Yes.
He keeps his sexual nature on a high level of the sacred and the spiritual. And without that, he'd rather not be involved. So when he read how open you were going to be as a prose writer, what did he communicate to you?
Well, so for me, I mean, Frank was my most important teacher, and to me, he is the most important living American writer.
I agree.
And the great example of his work is a kind of utter fearlessness and determination. You know, I think one thing that artists do, that a certain kind of artist has to do, and maybe to make the kind of art that I most value, one has to go into an abyss, and one has to follow one's subject all the way down. You know, we've become very skeptical of a kind of romantic myth of the artist, and I think that skepticism is a good thing. But I also think that there is real risk in making that kind of art, because when one goes into an abyss, there is no guarantee one will come back out. And writing parts of this book, Cleanness, I felt quite frightened. And I found myself in places I did not want to be. Frank was the great example I called to mind about what fearlessness in art looks like. You know, one of the things that most amazed me about the response to What Belongs to You was how much people talked about sex and just how surprised they were by the sex in the book. It didn't even occur to me to think that it was anything extraordinary, because Frank Bidart was my great teacher. You know, Frank Bidart is the great poet. Nothing is forbidden in his work.
Well, the fascinating thing for me is that Bidart wants to take that abyss and turn it into a holy place,
yeah.
A sacred place. And he is, to my mind, in that regard, astonishing. Now, to my great delight, I learned that it was Frank Bidart who convinced my guest, Garth Greenwell, to send me his first book, which dedication written on the front page is for Michael Silverblatt, whose discussions of literature have been a necessary nourishment to me for years. It's an honor to think of this book in your hands. With every best wish, Garth Greenwell. That written in a scroll that would be... because I didn't yet know you at all.
Course,
this was
yeah.
your very first book.
Yeah.
Had you published a book of poetry?
I never published a book. I published poems, but never a book.
So you were new to me then, when your first novel appeared, and now Cleanness from Farrah Straus and Giroux is the occasion of this interview. This book, if not the gamut, it runs a gamut. And it has in its design the fact that the second chapter takes its narrator into the realm of his secret desire, the desire to be completely dominated and experience pain with another man. In between that second chapter and the second to last chapter is the recording of a relationship of real tenderness, depth, and intimacy. He finds someone who needs to be dominated. And that need is extreme. The notes on the computer express a desire for no safety, no safe word,
right.
no condom, a absolute surrender.
Yes. So the second chapter of the book, which is called Gospodar, which is the Bulgarian word for master or lord, was the first thing I wrote after finishing What Belongs to You. I had written a couple of other pieces of what would become Cleanness. I did not have a sense of it as a book. When I wrote Gospodar, it was the first thing also that I wrote after coming back to America. It was a terrifying experience to write, because it's about an S&M experience, an S&M encounter that goes very wrong, and in which the narrator finds himself in a kind of real existential peril he hadn't intended to lead himself to. The minute I wrote that piece, I knew I had to write a companion piece. I knew that having explored this dynamic from the viewpoint of the submissive, I had to explore it from the viewpoint of the dominant. It would be years before I wrote the Little Saint, the second to last chapter. But it was at that moment, I think, understanding that relationship that made me conceive this book. And it was, you know, both of those stories were very frightening to write. But also in The Little Saint, I wanted to write about an S&M experience that goes very right. I loved what you said about Frank Bidart and about a kind of holiness he bestows on passions, on experiences that are very often denigrated. I wanted to treat these experiences with reverence, and I wanted to take seriously this character, the little saint, for whom promiscuity is a discipline of radical hospitality and a profoundly ethical relationship toward the other. And he, you know, something happens in that scene that was a surprise to me. I didn't know where that was heading. But he transmogrifies, we might say, you know, this narrator's experience, what he discovers about himself and about the pleasure he can take from inflicting pain. And the little saint transmogrifies that into something that is accommodating of a very humane relationship with the other.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm. It's coming to you from the studios of Carnegie Hall. And I'm talking with Garth Greenwell about his new book, Cleanness. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Garth Greenwell about Queenness, a delicate and profane portrayal of language, desire, and sex. I would say that it's rare for this kind of material to be approached with a sincere lack of embarrassment and a sincere acceptance that the self has caves that cannot be left unexplored, and that this is not being done to horrify the reader. It's being done to let the reader, whoever he or she may be a kind of passive witness to whatever the book is going to present. But I haven't really gone, except for a couple of times with, say, Hubert Selby Jr. In The Room and some of Last Exit to Brooklyn or some of Dennis Cooper's novels very, very different way. A little bit of James Purdy. But we don't get taken into the forbidden zone, and certainly not with the kind of astonished, patient calm that accompanies what you do here. I mean, it's a very interesting path that you take, because the rest of the book is disconnected from it. Otherwise, this is a man who would love to be loved, to experience love, to experience a loving exchange, and there's no explanation of the bridge between tender lovingness and S&M. We just witness it, experience it with a kind of shock. But I would guess, right, that the shape of this book is formal.
I think that's right. And I think that, the relationship between the nine chapters and the way that kind of reflections are created across sections and stories speak to each other, I hope that that's true. And I also hope that there's a way in which, the structure of the book too helps create that bridge. And then in the sections that tell the love story, the relationship between the narrator and this younger man named R, the narrator discovers in himself an ability to love that he did not know he had. But cruelty is also still there. And in fact, the title section, Queenness, it ends with what to me is the most important line in the whole book, which is where the narrator thinks, he doesn't say this, but he thinks as he's having sex with R, he makes a kind of declaration that until this moment in his life, he could never have made, which he says to himself, "Anything I am you have use for is yours." This kind of complete giving of himself over. But he's only able to arrive there passing through cruelty. And he's having sex with R, and he realizes that one of the things R feels and R wants to feel is pain. And the narrator realizes that he likes making him feel that. And it's by accommodating cruelty within this, I think, really profound love and tenderness that he's able to arrive at a moment when he gives himself over. So I wanted to write a book about sex, among other things, but in large part about sex, that tries to be accommodating, that tries to engage all of our facets, all aspects of us.
Our times have prepared for this book, that right now it's almost necessary for men, for women, for transsexuals, for people of alternative cultures, other races, every race, our own race, to speak the truth of their stories and to stop coding the story with goodness, with sweetness, when in fact there may be a terrible story that needs to be told and that needs to be heard. Now tell me, because this is such a quality of the new fiction of our time, you are bound, you can't help it, to be looked at by the people who've read your book as the man who took them into the sacred precincts of S&M. How do you feel about being even potentially regarded in that way?
Yeah, such an interesting question, and I guess I think that's wonderful. I'm happy to have taken him there. You know, I do think, you know, I feel immense reverence and regard for anyone who is brave enough to face up to what they desire. And I think there are truths about the human, about human experience, all human experiences, all human encounters. I think there are truths that we only find, or that we find most clearly, in these experiences. You know, and I do think that, you know, as a culture, as we're thinking about questions of desire and consent and coercion and what sexual violence is, you know, S&M culture has been wrestling with those questions for a long time and in ways that I think are far more complicated than the kind of easy, comforting stories we tell ourselves about those questions. And so I think that these experiences have a lot to teach us about the human. And, I mean, it moves me very much and makes me feel very grateful that you've read the book as you have.
Well, let me tell you and the listening audience. I was friends with Dennis Cooper in Los Angeles. He now lives in France. Book by book, as the five books of the George Mile cycle came out. And we were good friends and remain good friends. Book by book, as those books came out, Dennis had to make decisions not just how to shape that cycle into a complete cycle of reflections and post-reflections and repetitions and mirrorings, but he also had to decide how he was willing to appear to the outside world, to the world of readers. And his decision, which I think he's kept to this day, was to become not like his prose, not austere, not distanced, but for him to be someone alleviating what might be people's fear of him, to become the politest, sweetest, most generous, willing to read young people's work and comment on it and send it on if he could think of a correct place for a real champion.
Yes.
Of the younger generation's prose and of himself as a non-threatening but brilliant example of a writer who had gone into forbidden turf, but still is a human who is alive and living and not to be treated as if he should be locked up. So what's your decision about this kind of thing?
What I want for my writing is to embody a stance toward the world that I aspire to in my
which
person.
Which I think involves purity.
Well, yes, which involves purity and then is also skeptical of purity and worried about purity, but which involves, you know, you've used the word patient, which is for me one of the great virtues of art. To be patient, to look without judgment, to try to be open to experience and to the other, and to try to engage. You know, face-to-face encounters in my books are very important. And I do believe that any time two human beings look at one another face-to-face, everything is possible, that all the emotional notes are there. And I want to try to write in a way that is adequate to what seems to me the complexity of reality and of any encounter. I want to reject the easy stories our culture tells about how we interact with one another. So I hope, you know, in my writing and in my life, that's my aspiration.
That's beautiful. I've been talking with Garth Greenwell, author most recently of Cleanness. It's published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux. I think it's an extraordinarily interesting and beautiful book. Thank you for joining me, Garth.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show. Also available at Apple, Spotify, and all podcast services, really. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Extra special thanks to New York contributor Alan Felsenthal and to our technical director here at Carnegie Hall, Leszek Wojcik. Our regular special thanks go to Sean Sullivan and Alan Howard, engineer Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when David Reif is our guest, discussing Divorcing by Susan Talbus.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.